parenting doesn't come with a manual, and when your child learns differently, there's no one size fits all. Here, we think out the box. We celebrate every unique mind, every different path, and every win, big or small. Welcome to Out the Box, where kids and parents grow together.
Good morning and welcome to Out the Box, for minds that don't fit the mold and hearts that keep striving. I'm Simone Herring, mom, teacher, literacy and dyslexia therapist, and I'm so glad that you're joining us today on Chai FM 101.9. Today we're talking about the challenges of raising boys to be good men. What are we as parents up against? You can WhatsApp your thoughts or questions to 061 895 1019 or email me at simone@chai.co.za. Joining me today is Luke Lamprecht. Luke is a child protection specialist and the head of advocacy and policy at Women and Men Against Child Abuse. His work focuses on protecting children from online exploitation, grooming, and the growing risks young people face in the digital world today. Luke also runs a program called Fight with Insight in Johannesburg. FWI uses boxing to teach life skills, nutrition, and responsibility. The aim is to exit good men into the world. Luke, welcome to Out the Box, and thank you so much for joining us and making the time to help us understand the challenges our boys are faced with today. So before we get into this whole interview, which is about you were at the Bella Vista conference, and that's where I heard your presentation, and we're going to be speaking about the manosphere, et cetera, et cetera. But before we get into that, Luke, what does a good man actually look like?
Well, I don't think a good man looks very different from a good person, to be frank. So I think that when we look at the overlaps around moral development and around how we exit young people into the world, it's really whether they're boys or girls, that they are young people who don't harm others, they don't harm themselves, they don't get involved in things that are asocial or antisocial or criminal type activities. And they contribute meaningfully to society, their community, and if they have families, that they contribute to those families. I mean, that really is the foundation of what makes a good moral person. When we look at men, the expectations around men would probably include things like, and does include things like, the ability to provide, the ability to protect, the ability to not use that that power and their sort of like the ability to protect and provide as a way to kind of leverage that over those that they care for in the case of domestic violence, but rather see it as a great honor and to do that job that they're given in those roles, for example, father and husband, to help raise the next generation of good people as good male role models.
And today in South Africa, there's so few fathers that are involved in the family. So what would you say about the effect of that, no father role models in a family unit?
So the first thing is that having a father present at home isn't a benign thing. So in other words, it can either be a good influence or it could be a bad influence. I mean, there are some fathers in homes that behave atrociously and cause immense damage to their families. So a present father isn't necessarily a good father. So we want fathers who are good fathers in families. Now, in the absence of a good father, it's what people are talking about as what we're calling the dad deficit, is that the dad deficit puts the mother in a very precarious position, because an absent father is also not benign. So in other words, the dad not being at home also has a negative effect. The first thing is that a single mom then has to do all the jobs herself. And generally, when we look at sort of early childhood development, particularly the first 2-3 years of life, The first year of life is largely the mom and the mom making the child feel safe in the world through what we call the maternal function. And that's that function that kind of holds the child close to them and loves them unconditionally. And that makes the child feel safe. And what that does is it reduces anxiety. From the time the child becomes like a walkie-talkie, the what we call the paternal function becomes quite important, well, becomes crucially important. And that's that kind of, they talk about it being the penetrative function that pries the child away from the breast of the mother and makes them enter the world. So, like if you think of a mother having a child, a boy child, and she's saying, over my dead body will my son play rugby, dad's out buying rugby boots. And that kind of roughhousing, that male presence, what that does is it actually reduces aggression in the second year of life. Once that is done by the third year of life, we hope children are socialized. If they're socialized, other people want to play with them, plays the vocation and language of childhood, and then they get socialized through their play and through their peer group. So what we are seeing is that it does include high levels of violence. The absence of a father figure. So it definitely contributes to aggression, but does also contribute to anxiety. So if we look at the primary challenge we face by absent fathers is there's an increase in aggression and violence.
Luke, I want our listeners to just mull over this for a moment while we are going to an ad break, and we will come back and continue.
Parenting doesn't come with a manual, and when your child learns differently, there's no one size fits all. Here, we think out the box. We celebrate every unique mind, every different path, and every win, big or small. Welcome to Out the Box, where kids and parents grow together.
This is Chai FM 101.9 on Out the Box. I'm Simone, and I'm speaking to, and let me say, I'm very privileged to be speaking to Luke Lamprecht. Luke, as I said, I attended your presentation at the Bella Vista conference, and it was shocking. It was shocking, and I think people in the room were astounded at the things that you were telling us that we didn't know was going on. Well, I certainly didn't know. I walked away and I was asking myself, am I doing enough to protect my boys? Now, I have three boys. I don't have girls. We're framing this discussion around your presentation. What are you seeing happening with boys today in real life versus the online world?
So the two are now so linked to one another, you actually can't separate them. Mm-hmm. You know, what is happening online is affecting what happens in the world. What happens in the world is affecting what's happened online. Because, I mean, essentially, our children are wired into the machine. And basically, you know, they are getting a lot of their information from the devices. And, you know, instead of getting information from trusted adults, they tend to be roaming around with influencers and AI. And I'm currently seeing children harmed more online than I'm seeing them harmed in the world. Okay, and that has been a shift probably since COVID. And a lot of the referrals I get, it's not because of something that has only happened in the world. It is, for example, something that has happened online or has been seen online or they've been accidentally exposed online. And then that behavior appears in the world. And that behavior then gets the children into actual trouble, you know, getting arrested by the police. We're getting letters from the FBI. Children getting expelled from school, you know, children getting removed from their homes. So we've seen some very real consequences, you know, and that's based on very simple social learning theory, that what children are seeing online does impact on them and does impact on their behavior in the world. So we need to understand the two things are inextricably linked to one another. What we are seeing, however, is that the extreme of the behavior is getting more and more extreme online. And as a result, what is happening is the behavior we see and appear in the world is also getting more extreme. And the extremeness of the behavior is becoming more prolific, and the children are getting younger and younger. So we are seeing all of the all of the vectors going in the wrong direction. You know, the children becoming younger, the behavior is becoming worse. And I mean, some of the behavior is frankly terrifying, and other of the behavior is just simply bizarre.
Can you give us an example of one of your cases?
I'll give you like a spread of what I gave at Bella Vista. So the first thing is the primary age at which these young people are at risk that I see are generally between the ages of 12 and 17. So that's your biggest risk. So through the course of puberty. The second thing is it knows no religion. So I've had Muslim children, Jewish children, Christian children, a-religious children, you know, et cetera, coming through me. And it also knows no race. It does show up differently depending on the race of the child, but it shows up nonetheless. I'll give you an example of a 16-year-old black boy from a prestigious boys' school. So this is a boys' school, and he got involved in this world of nihilism, which is what my whole talk was about at Bella Vista. And they then consider themselves misanthropes. So they hate people and they hate humanity and they hate the world. So the solution for him was, because the world is a nihilistic place and he hates people, there's no point in being here. So he tried to take his own life, and that's how he ended up with me. And how we worked out that it was influenced by the online sort of radicalization or extremization of young people was based on the suicide note he wrote, which was largely based around anime narratives. Now, anime narratives are very popular. It's Japanese cartoons, or Japanese, not really cartoons, Japanese comic books with stories which can be very nihilistic. And he, you know, fashioned himself on one of those characters, because we must remember there is a becoming and a belonging. So that age group are looking for someone to become a good young man, and they're looking for somewhere to belong among other men and women, which one day will then become their families and their jobs, etc. So how it showed up in him in particular was that he just didn't care about the world anymore, because he believes the world doesn't care about him. Went from being a straight A student to a student who didn't pass a single exam. So that was it. Then we had a Muslim boy, and what happened with the Muslim boy, he accused the school of being racist, and he then wrote letters threatening to bomb up the school. He was 13. Then I've had a range of a broad range of white boys, Christian, one from the Jewish community, that got involved in, for example, plots to plant bombs in malls, getting airsoft guns and planning to go and shoot and rape homeless people in a building site. The other one, he threatened to murder his mother in her sleep and then go on a rampage the next day. And we're getting those tip-offs via Australia and the US largely.
So they're calling you about these cases?
Yeah. So what happens is that, so for example, the what parents must be aware of, the two platforms that are currently tipping us off where a lot of these things are happening are Telegram and Discord. Telegram being a messaging app, Discord being a messaging app that's going to connected largely to the gaming community. And what happens is as we get the tip-offs, these were all white boys now. Okay, so what you'll see showing up among the white boys is racism, there's anti-Semitism, we've seen quite a lot of anti-Semitism involved in these cases as well. There's white nationalism involved, you know, high levels of violence, and it's violence for violence's sake. So we get these tip-offs via, say, Telegram or Discord, wherever those servers are run. They tip off the FBI, because the FBI's counterterrorism unit has actually classified this behavior as a form of terrorism, which is called NVE, or nihilistic violent extremism. And as I say, with the misanthropy kind of thrown in at the end. And they basically track the young people's conversations, and they put up certain flags. And if the flags come up, they then notify the FBI, because the FBI has defined this recently as a form of terrorism. And hence the FBI notifies our counterterrorism people, who then notify me, to assist with the team to intervene with these families and children. So that's kind of how the cases get to us.
Like I say, I mean, it's shocking that I was watching the Louis Theroux documentary called Manosphere on Netflix in preparation, as well as with your presentation. How do the children get to that point? How What happens? It's like indoctrination that takes place. So what is happening that these kids are exposed to people like HS TikToky? Tiki Toki, did you hear about that guy? He is frightening.
I must say, now people don't want to hear what I'm about to say, but if anyone watched the Adolescence movie, that's an accurate depiction. If you watch Louis Theroux and the Manosphere, those guys are moderates. Everybody talks about Andrew Tate and the Manosphere. They're moderates on in that world. I mean, the people I'm talking about and deal with, those guys are businessmen, and they're influencers, and they work on the sociosexual hierarchy of the alpha male and the PUAs, the pickup artist, and the MGTOWs, or the men going their own way. They're their own whole group, along with the incels. They're their own whole group of people.
I think you need to explain incel, because a lot of people are too afraid to watch Adolescence. I mean, I've come across a lot of friends who have chosen not to watch Adolescence.
So an incel is an involuntary celibate that works on an online principle, that there is an 80-20 principle, that 80% of women will be attracted to 20% of men, and they'll be attracted to them based on the alpha sociosexual hierarchy. So they'll be attracted to wealthy men who are physically strong and look good. So they are handsome, strong, wealthy men with power. They may behave appallingly, but that's kind of who they're attracted to. So what they then say is that no woman will ever be attracted to them. So the genetic imperative to kind of find a mate and go out and have children and have a family, that social contract, they believe, is broken. And because that social contract is broken, they say the solution to it is because their genes don't allow for them to be part of the social contract of the world. They engage in, some of them, what's called an accelerationist philosophy.
Luke, I'm sorry, I don't like to interrupt, but I have to go to an ad break. Please, we're going to continue as soon as we're back.
Parenting doesn't come with a manual, and when your child learns differently, there's no one size fits all. Here, we think out the box. We celebrate every unique mind, every different path, and every win, big or small. Welcome to Out the Box, where kids and parents grow together.
Welcome back to Out the Box, Chai FM 101.9. We're going to pick up our discussion with Luke Lamprecht, where he was speaking about incels and the alpha male manosphere that our kids are trying to navigate. Luke?
So you'll find with the very kind of famous incels, in other words, the ones famous within the manosphere and incel community, they engage in this, what we call, accelerationist behavior. So not only are they nihilistic and they feel that, they're not part of the social contract and they will never procreate and so on, no girl will ever choose them. The other thing they do is they want to hasten it. So we have examples of what was considered the first incel, who went out and killed a whole lot of people and then himself. We have examples of school shooters who kill their parents, then go out and kill a lot of people, then kill themselves. So they are based largely on cult-like tactics. So when you ask how do they get involved in these things online, there's a cultness to it. Now, what is different from other radicalization movements, and what is different from other cult-type movements, is that generally in a radicalization, say if you take, for example, an Islamic State, there's a place you go, there's a caliphate, there's a group of people, you go somewhere, you fight for a cause, and you live that life. If you look at a cult, like if you look at someone like Charles Manson, you will see there's a particular leader. Now, what is very different in these nihilistic environments is there is no such thing. So there's no leader. There are role models, but there's no leader, and there is no ideology whatsoever. So it is just simply the destruction of society, which is why they choose all kinds of random things to do. I mean, it's anything from sextortion to self-harm to animal abuse to child sexual abuse to, I mean, they just pick things that are basically against society and basically call for the wanton destruction of society. So the other terrifying thing is that in the groups that I've been around and sort of had cases around and been exposed to, there's also no adults involved. So these things that exist in the internet, which are largely forums and groups and chats and thing and what they call boards, they are run by teenagers, so there's no adult in the background here luring children in. They run by themselves.
So how do they, so is there an algorithm or a way where they're reaching out to the boys, and how does that work? How do they know that that's a young boy who, is vulnerable?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, there absolutely is. So if you look at the particularly the nihilistic violent extremists, so now these are not the incels. The incels do different things. But if you look at the nihilistic violent extremists, these ones that, we get in tip-offs from the FBI, number one, they know they choose certain channels. So the only channels that I have seen them use being referred to us is Discord and Telegram. So there are particular platforms that are more dangerous. And then the second thing is they target vulnerability. So they will look for certain keywords in the young people's posts, and they will hone in on those particular young people. So if you present yourself with a mental health disorder of any description, so you're depressed, you're anxious, you have some kind of diagnosis or whatever, the other thing is if you present yourself as in any way neurodivergent, so I mean there's even things that they call mentor cells. So a mentor cell is a person with a mental health disorder who's also an incel. Or a neurodivergent person, for example, a child on the autism spectrum. They then employ the first of the cult techniques because what they know is that the majority of that group is struggling with the mindset of, I don't fit in, I don't belong anywhere, I'm very lonely. In fact, all these boys I've spoken to, the first thing I ask them is, are you lonely? And they'll tell me yes. So the first thing is that they're lonely, and we know loneliness increases aggression as well. Then they also employ what the internet and AI and that is very, very good at, which is high levels of agreeableness. So in other words, there's no challenging of anything they say. The AI on the internet will simply just agree with them. And you're so wonderful. And, it's terrible people treat you like this. And I love you completely, unconditionally. And I'll be your best friend is what we call love bombing. Now, that is generally the first. So they will target children they know are lonely, that have nowhere to belong. That's the first thing. They target them via quite specific channels. That's the second thing. And then the third thing is they take that vulnerability, knowing that the general thing it causes is loneliness, and they then provide the solution to it. So relationships, friendships, belonging to groups and boards and forums and so on. And that's how they lure them in. And generally, the first way they trap them, so they trap them on a variety of levels. And remember, the end goal of the trapping is a suicide. Okay, so that's the end goal, is for someone to kill themselves.
And that's what they want these boys to do. That's the aim. Are they?
So the end aim of this is death. To the extent that they have had people killing themselves during live recordings where people are watching and cheering, cheering them on while they're killing themselves. We've had situations where a boy is busy gassing himself in a car, and he phones and he says, "No, I'm not sure about this." And his girlfriend says, "No, you're suffering. There's too much pain. You must do this." And then he successfully kills himself. She was 17, and she was then charged with sort of aiding and abetting. I think she was an
Saw
accomplice
that.
or a in a murder case. I remember the ultimate goal is destruction. Okay, because they're misanthropic nihilists. Okay. So if you look at the first and the biggest thing I say to young people when I talk to them and to parents and to your listeners, etc., the first place they start is they ask for photos. Okay, so that's where this all starts. So we need photos. So now we need a headshot. Okay, so now we can see who you are. Now we want you in your uniform or in your sports kit, because now they can search your logos and they can find out where you are and they can locate you in the world in your schools. Like the one boy that was trying to get out, the person who had extorted him started sending him pictures of his mother, where his mother worked. And saying, "I'm going to go get your mother if you don't do this." So they're honing in terms of location, in terms of where you are, what school you're at, what sport you play, etc. And then they start asking for nudes, and then the nudes become basically the first of the hooks. It's what in grooming theory we call a taboo violation. Because, even if it is self-produced, these are children. So it is child sexual abuse material that is being produced, but it's been self-produced. And then once they send that to these people who they believe are their girlfriends who love them very much, they will send them back a list of things they want them to do and send more photos, more videos, etc. Otherwise, they threaten to release that nude image on social media pages, for example, Instagram, where they now found them on Instagram. And then in the one case I had, the person on the other side said, "Look, I'm just going to show you I'm serious, that I'm going to send this image out. So I'm going to send it to your five closest friends on Instagram via DM. And you can check with them that I've sent it. And if you don't do A, B, C, D, E, what I'm going to do is release this photo to the whole of Instagram." And one of the other boys that it had been sent to, he answered back to the person who sent the message, and he said to them, "Please stop this. My friend's a good guy. You're really upsetting him," and so on. So the people who were sextorting the other boy who sent the nudes right back to the boy who was trying to protect the sextorted boy and said to him, "Really, you want to get involved now? You better send me the list of A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Otherwise, if you don't do that, I'm releasing your friend's nude."
And are these people adults that are grooming this way and doing this extortion?
So the sextortion is often adults. It's often a ring, and they often target quite specific demographics. Like they will target boys in wealthy schools. So pretty much all the sextortion cases that have been referred to me, and this has been for years now. I mean, this NVE has only been over the last year. This, the terrorism stuff, but the sextortion stuff goes back to COVID, just after COVID. So that I've been seeing forever. And that is generally adults that is doing that. And the reason they do that and they ask for the lists of things is they then take that content and they put them up on child pornography sites and they sell it. So they don't blackmail the children, they sextort them. So that is the first thing I explain to professionals, your listeners, parents, children. I say to them, "Listen, if you make because a teenager on a phone is the equivalent of giving an unlicensed driver Ferrari with no brakes or nitrous and turbo with no seatbelt. They do stupid stuff because they have this, the need to belong as a teenager is a biological imperative, and the need to develop an identity and be desirable to other people is a biological imperative, and they don't have Executive function to think it through and manage it. So I'll say to them, even if you have sent that, we will manage it. And we've got, I work with a cybersecurity company alongside the people which is the electronic sexual abuse police unit of our country, alongside the FBI people, you know, to attempt to trace and shut these things down. So those are quite organized things, but the radicalizers do the same thing. But what they do after the sextortion is they then get them to do progressively more damaging things. For example, they will the one thing they are very prone to doing is they get the person that they have now radicalized and have all these pictures of and have sextorted, they get them to self-mutilate, but they self-mutilate, they cut the names of the inverted sort of, I don't know, the handlers or the seniors or whatever in these groups. They get them to carve their names into their bodies as a form of self-harm. And then they get them to do really, really, really terrible things, you know, which, yeah, like I say, then in the end can lead to murders and suicides.
So Luke, when you've got a teenager who locks himself in his room and is on his phone and on the internet, and we as parents don't know what they're doing, and they're not showing us their phones because they put passwords on, and the whole argument of, so as parents, how do we actually look for these red flags?
The first thing is that these children's silence is talking to you. You know, if a child has locked themselves in their room and the entire way they become and belong is on a screen, the question I ask parents is, would you let Elon Musk babysit your children? And most parents say no. And I say, but you are. I mean, that's exactly what you're doing. So the most important thing when children get phones, you'll see all over the world they're pushing back. You know, there's been a big report released now out of Australia about whether this ban under 16 has been successful. Yes. They're now looking at blocking things on a device level, you know. So the world is waking up to the fact that this is a problem. But there's a very simplistic answer to your question. It is not true that their privacy supersedes your duty of care to protect your child. It does not happen like that. So the analogy I use is that if you believed your child was taking crack or meth or whatever, and they were smoking it in their room and they were blown out of their heads, would you search their room? And the answer, if you asked me, is I absolutely would search their room. Then I'd go and look at who's supplying it to them. Then I would report that to the police. Then I would take my child to rehab. You know, you have got to see these devices as the equivalent of that. Okay. And you have to secure the device in the same way you secure your home. You know, we have always said raising children, don't leave children to their own devices. Then we do, you know. And the reality of it is that has to come in the initial contract when they get the phone. I'm dealing now with high levels of early cell phone addiction, where never mind the content, the content's another issue. But the addiction is causing the children to defraud their parents. They steal their credit cards. They copy the CCV numbers. They spend tens of thousands of rand online. They go on gambling sites. They go into cryptocurrency. They do all kinds of fraudulent things with their parents' credit cards. I've had people go in and change their report cards, you know, in the school system. I've had cases reported to me because they've been flagged via the school's internal flagging systems. So what we have to do is we have to give a contract and say, this is not private. Your device is not private. Okay, it's private until I get an alert that something is wrong. And in order for me to get an alert, I need to have security features. So if you think of how you secure your home, you have electric fences, you have fences, you have gates, you have armed security, you know. I mean, I often joke, not joke with people, that if I go to do a talk at a school like Yeshiva, I have to leave half an hour early to get through the front gate because the security is so high. So we have been very good at protecting our children in the world, but we are terrible at protecting them, you know, in the world. And there's this confusion of gentle parenting with permissive parenting. And permissive parenting is very, very bad for children's development, where children who are particularly at risk, like children with behavioral problems, they already think that they are their parents' equal or superior. And now what happens is it increases the violence in homes. So what I'm seeing an increase in is domestic violence where the son is assaulting the mother.
I mean, I heard you speak also about teachers in the UK where boys are refusing to speak to them. There's this whole thing of don't speak to a female teacher.
Okay, so that's the misogynistic component. So the misanthropic component is the component where they hate humanity, they hate everybody. There's a lot of misogyny in the manosphere. In fact, the whole of patriarchy is propped up by misogyny. And misogyny is a hatred of women. Okay, so the argument is that women have taken over the world via what's called the misandry, which is the hatred of men, and that because of that, there's been an attack on men. So what happens is men have to fight back to take back their masculinities. For example, the MGTOWs, the men going their own way. I don't like women. So what they do to show that they are part of that system is they accept no authority from any female. So you can have a male teaching assistant, they'll listen to him. You'll have a highly qualified female teacher that they won't even acknowledge, or they'll tell her to F off and call her by her first name. You know, that's the kind of stuff you've seen in the UK a lot at the moment. You know, that's the misogynists believe that there's an attack on men and women have taken over, so they need to fight back. And then you have this really appalling treatment of women. And where I see that play out is a lot of my boys that I see with behavioral problems, the target of their behavior is very much their mother.
Why do they begin to hate women so much? I mean, I listened to, on, as I said, Louis Theroux's documentary. There was an influencer who said, "I'm the dictator and you the subordinate." So he was referring to him being the dictator and the woman being his subordinate, and she has to do what he says. And then with adolescents, am I correct in saying that a boy who is an involuntary celibate, an incel, blames the women for that and then becomes violent against women?
Well, they don't only target women, okay? They target everybody, because remember they're also angry with the what they consider to be the alpha men who are hogging all the women. Okay, so while they their behavior, for example, at school, the misogynistic guys, they very much do target females, female teachers, female classmates, you know, etc. When it comes to the incels, they hate the men who are taking the women also. So they don't only hate the women, they hate the alpha men as well.
What is the red pill? That also came up. I've got no idea what that is.
Yeah, so the red, you get red pill, blue pill, pink pill, black pill, white pill, you get all kinds of pills. But basically the red pill, blue pill movement came out of the Matrix movie. So in the movie The Matrix, there's in fact a documentary called The Red Pill, which you might find useful if you're interested in this stuff. A bit of a controversial documentary, but it's worth watching, you know, based on the perspective that it gives. But essentially, what happens in the movie The Matrix is we're all living in a matrix, and you have a choice. You can take the blue pill, and you can live in the matrix entirely unaware that you live in the matrix, and you can live happily ever after. Or you choose to take the red pill. If you take the red pill, you choose to be awakened to the reality of the world, which in the case of the Matrix is that you're plugged into a machine in the Matrix. Whereas in the world of the manosphere, what the red pills are saying is you need to wake up as to what is happening here. Women are taking over and we need to fight back. And once you have taken the red pill, and you've accepted that the social contract, which they consider to be the blue pill or the equivalent of the matrix, that the red pill now is what you have taken, and you have to act in accordance with the red pill philosophy, which is all the things we've been discussing.
So before we just break for a few seconds, I'd like to ask parents, are they aware of this manosphere of incels, of red and blue pills? And if you aren't, how do you think you will make yourself more aware? We'll be back right after this.
Parenting doesn't come with a manual, and when your child learns differently, there's no one size fits all. Here, we think out the box. We celebrate every unique mind, every different path, and every win, big or small. Welcome to Out the Box, where kids and parents grow together.
Welcome back. You're listening to Out the Box on Chai FM 101.9. We've been discussing the manosphere and how we protect our boys from the dangers of social media, etc. Our boys are looking for belonging, and there is a difference between belonging and fitting in. And why I ask this is because my niece actually mentioned it to me. She said to me, what does fitting in mean and what does belonging mean? And I never thought of the difference. Can you tell us about that and the sense of belonging, that if a boy has a sense of belonging, a healthy sense of belonging, he won't be vulnerable to all this dangerous social media stuff that goes on. But if he's just fitting in.
So belonging is that place where you can be completely authentic, and particularly when you're a teenager, you're still working out who you're going to become. So I say to teenagers, you need to be okay enough with who you are now while you're working out who you're going to become. And belonging is where you are able to explore elements of your identity and have that reflected back to you by the people around you who truly care about you. And there's no expectation that you behave outside of your personal, moral, ethical, religious, whatever your parameters are. You're not expected to behave outside of the bounds of what you consider core to your identity. Whereas fitting in is the opposite of that. Fitting in is you morph yourself because either you give up your identity or you don't have an identity. And what you do is you just chameleon yourself into whoever the group needs you to be in order to fit in. And then you tend to behave in ways that are asocial or they go against your parentally taught ethics and values or against your religious beliefs, you know, the things that hold our identity together as we develop. So belonging is exploring yourself and getting people who care about you to assist with your identity. Fitting in is abandoning of that in order to fit in to a group where it's not reflective of your identity, your values, your roles, your morals, etc.
What I've noticed about fitting in is that they often kids that are ADHD or autistic kids. For instance, the ADHD kid can be very loud and in your face and impulsive and disinhibited. And in order to fit in, they will do anything, like steal money, buy alcohol for their friends. And they're almost buying that friendship, but they don't belong to the group. Does that make sense?
You see, for example, children on the autistic spectrum struggle to read social cues and to take other people's perspectives. Not because they don't want to, but simply because they struggle to. Okay, children with ADHD are often quite impulsive, so they struggle with, you know, saying things that are inappropriate. You know, they struggle with doing impulsive things that, you know, appear to be stupid, so they become the class clown or, you know, act up and act out and do things that are outrageous because, you know, the edginess of, you know, them becoming one of the edgelords that everybody thinks is so cool and becoming the, you know, the court jester, whatever the case is what they do. So certainly children who are divergent in any way, okay, are obviously more at risk because they are struggling with the way they process the world. And as we're relatively simple creatures, we're input-output creatures. Input is the senses, output is our behavior. And because of the whatever the neurodiversity is, they don't process it the same way. So as a result, the way they read things and respond to them don't always correlate. And as a result, they find themselves in positions where they find it quite difficult to find a true sense of belonging. And as a result, they kind of do things to morph to, fit in, as the class clown or buying things for people or vaping or whatever.
Just to earn some kind of sense that you are part of a group. And so I suppose that everything that goes on online, they are so vulnerable to that. I mean, I saw this thing called, what did you call it? Aspie, it's like an Aspie group.
As, yeah, so they call themselves the, they believe that they're superior because people who have Asperger's see the world in ways that are superior to other people. That's the sort of Aspie supremacists. So you've got white supremacists, you've got Aspie supremacists. They believe they're superior to everybody else because of the neurodivergence.
And when you mentioned the anti-Semitism, it shocked me when I was watching this documentary. Do you think that the people that run these groups or are in these groups actually understand what they're talking about when they speak about genocide and anti-Semitism?
Absolutely not. I've seen some children send particularly it's generally Nazis. It's generally Nazi stuff. So it's generally swastikas with slogans and whatever, or memes or whatever the case is. And when I sit down with them and I say to them, "Do you have any idea what this actually is?" And they actually don't. So particularly the younger ones, that sort of 12, 13, going on 14 kind of age group, that age group does not have a good sense of what exactly they're doing. They're doing it because it's outrageous. They're doing it to be outrageous.
There's so much that I want to talk to you about, and I kind of went down a rabbit hole when I was looking through the slides from the presentation because there is just so much that we need to be talking about. But before we end, can you help us, our parents and teachers, find a way to build strong relationships and have grounded boys who don't have this need to belong online? How do we put them on that path?
Yeah, the very first thing we've got to do is we have to give our children the wow of the world. I'm deeply sad that our children spend too much time online. I'm very sad about it because basically what it means is we've given them a world that they don't want to live in. So they create an alternative reality. That's on us, not on them. So we have to create a world that they actually want to live in. And if that is going to be the case, they have to have the company of at least one what Vygotsky calls enlightened witness. That is there to share and witness and reflect the magic that can be living in our world, because we do and have given them an extremely nihilistic view of the world that, frankly, sometimes I don't want to live in, if I'm honest. So I wake up, I switch on the news, and I think, what happened today? People are shooting each other all over the place and blocking things and threatening and, posting ARs of themselves as Jesus and the Pope and whatever. I'm like, the world's gone completely mad. We have to be that beacon to them. And then obviously we have to expose them to things in the world, and we have to expose them to people they can emulate. So you'll remember Emma Sadler mentioned that book Girls on the Edge, saying that teenagers need at least two non-parental mentors. So like in the rabbis, muddies, et cetera, et cetera. But people that can draw them into the world and out of the machine and say, this is a world that is good to live in. And this is what's good in the world.
And that's spending time with them. It's not anything else. It's making time.
It's all related to time and when you're with them being present. The scariest thing I see is that I say to children, how many of you think you spend too much time online? 75% of them put their hands up. I ask them how many of them think their parents spend too much time online? 100% of them put their hands up.
Luke, thank you for helping to protect our children in these frightening spaces that we as parents don't understand. And thank you for helping us not look away. Because in order to protect our children, we need to do it with awareness, courage, and intention. So I really want to thank you, and I do hope that you will come back onto the show because it is so valuable, so valuable. Thank you, Luke. Thank you.
Thanks for inviting me. Have a good day.